The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It's really been a fun show with former Georgia coach Jim Donnan earlier. We talked to Bruce Feldman from The Athletic, and of course, Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher also dropped by. But I cannot tell you how excited I am about this next topic. We have spent years, over time, inadvertently or purposely, bringing up the name Louis Grizzard on this program. He died at the age of 47. For those of you who missed him, you missed something very, very special. Our next guest will hope to recreate that and did recreate it in a book that came out about 2 years ago entitled Louis Grizzard, The Dog That Did Not Hunt. Peter Stoddard joining us. Peter, thank you. I can't tell you how long, I don't know why it's taken this long to get to this point, but I am really thrilled you are here. Good afternoon.
Well, I'm thrilled to be on with you, Paul, and I'm curious, did you ever meet Louis when you were a young journalist?
I sure did, and I cannot tell you how starstruck I was. I met him for the first time at a radio station that I was working at, and he had dropped by and spent the morning, and I got to know him after that, and would occasionally see him on the road, and I won't get too deep into the story, but have seen the best of Louis in the afternoon and the worst of him at night.
Well, that's a riot. Maybe a subject for a side conversation.
I helped him. It was a basketball tournament about 30 years ago in Orlando. I'll never forget it. I walked out with Louis, which meant I made sure he got home.
Oh, good. Good. He sometimes needed some assistance with that.
But what a thrill to know him, and I was a fan from the day that I heard his name. And I want you to tell the audience more about him, because you have done some great reporting and putting this tribute to him together.
Well, thank you. Within this last calendar year, I was driving and a retired friend called me and said, Paul Feinbaum just made mention that somebody should do a documentary on Louis Grizzard. And I said, well, I'm driving, you know, why don't you call Paul Feinbaum? And he said, no, I can't. I said, why not? I'm busy watching the Paul Feinbaum show. What can you do with a retired friend who's got nothing? At any rate, glad to be with you. I never met Louis. I just simply thought he was the greatest humorist America ever produced. They called him, you know, the Mark Twain of the South. I loved Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, but I don't relate to those characters as well as I do to everything that Louis Grizzard talked about. I'm a rabid Georgia Bulldog alum. I don't care to hunt that much, but Louis was more averse to hunting than I am, and I just started looking for his artifacts. Went down to a museum in his honor in his hometown of Moreland, Georgia. I wholeheartedly recommend visits there. I went to the University of Georgia, where rare books and manuscripts library are boxes and boxes of his book manuscripts, notes, edited artifacts, and I've been in there twice. It's like holding the Holy Grail in your hands. And I met with a gentleman who was a former president of the University of Georgia Board of Regents, who still owns 25 newspapers across the Carolinas and North Georgia. And I just asked him, and he was acquainted with Louis, and I asked, has anybody written a book about Louis? Is anybody writing a book about him? And he said, no. And I said, well, why do you suppose? His legacy is fading. And we met over coffee, and he just said, well, I don't know. Maybe somebody just needs to champion the cause. Maybe that's you. And I was dumbfounded, and he made introductions to Barbara and Vince Dooley, and it just snowballed from there. Everybody just said, yeah, somebody needs to write something. And I took it upon myself, and I'm astonished. I'm the only single author to ever write a book about the guy. Mark Twain and Will Rogers have 20 plus books written about him. And there, I can go down a lot of rabbit holes, so I'll let you ask some questions.
Yeah, no, I always the subjects that I'm so enthusiastic about, I have to tell myself, don't get in the way, because I want everyone to know as much as you do and what I think I know about Lewis. Let's start at the very beginning, Peter, because to tell his story, you have to go back to his, you know, him growing up. You mentioned in Moreland. He obviously matriculated to college, and you know, pick up the story somewhere in that, because you know what he did early in his career is unbelievable.
His mother was a first grade teacher, and at Moreland was an still a very, very small town down near Noonan, Georgia. And his mother said, "Now I know you don't want to be a farmer, but if you don't want to end up working at that textile mill, you're going to need to be paying attention to your grades." She was a first grade teacher and a beloved teacher. And ironically, the Lewis Grizzard Museum is housed in that textile mill. And what they made at that textile mill was women's hosiery. So there's some irony in that. Lewis spent a lot of time trying to get ladies out of their hosiery. But I interviewed two of his Noonan High School teachers. One taught journalism, one taught English. They recognized his genius early on. He always asked for extra assignments, and they are mentioned in his books as people to whom he owes a lot of credit for spurring his writing skills. He started his freshman year writing for – he didn't want to work – write for the Athens Banner-Herald, which was kind of it's the paper that survives today, but it was pretty bland in its day. He did not want to write for the student newspaper, the Red and Black, and there was an upstart Athens Daily News that really kind of took off, and a very edgy humor. Athens at the time was the smallest town in America with two competing newspapers, and the Athens Daily News really took off with some great skilled writers and editors. Some are still with us, some have passed on, some quite recently. But Lewis's genius was recognized early on. His first year at Georgia was Vince Dooley's first year as coach, and Lewis joked, saying, when I came to Georgia, they gave me a dorm room at Reed Hall and a typewriter. They gave Vince a car and a house, but Vince got the raw deal because he had to take over a miserable football team. Lewis was plucked out of Georgia a couple credits short of graduation by the Atlanta Journal's Jim Minter.
Oh, sure.
Who went to Athens and talked to all the powers that be, including Vince Dooley, or Joel Eaves was the athletic director, and they just said, "There's just one. You need a sports writer, editor, trainee for the journal. There's just one guy, Lewis Grizzard." And Jim Minter hired him under the mandate that, "Lewis, you're going to get your degree. You've got to get your credit hours." And he would have been a graduate of, I think, 1967, 1968. And he said, "Yes, sir, I absolutely will do that." He never did. UGA finally gave him his degree in 1984. And as a sports writer and editor, he was a stickler for accuracy and professionalism. And he didn't want to stay put for too long. He did some freelance writing for Sports Illustrated. He did some public relations writing for the Atlanta Falcons. And he was, in his early 20s, recruited to go to Chicago to become the sports editor of the Chicago Sun-Times. And he was recognized for his talent there, but he was a fish out of water. He was a Southerner in a city he did not like very much. And ultimately, they made him the offer to become the executive editor of the entire newspaper, which he might have been age 30. And obviously floored by the prestige, by the increase in salary. He left wife number two in Chicago. I should say she left him. At any rate, that thereupon he reached back to Jim Minter to say, God, I'll take a cut in pay. Can you please just move me back to Georgia? And Jim Minter's wife jokingly said, you're not going to hire that guy again, are you? and Minter said, yes, and he's going to be a bargain. So Lewis came back and was writing sports, and I think that's when I first started to notice him. I was reading Jim Minter, Furman Fisher, Jesse Outler.
Oh, sure.
When I moved from the phony pages to the sports page. But after a few months of that, Jim Minter said, Lewis, your hands are kind of tied writing sports. Why don't you move over to the general column section of the journal and just write what you want to? And Lewis said, well, what will I write about? And Jim Minter said, you'll figure it out. And Lewis no longer had to let facts get in the way of a good story. And that's when his career blossomed.
Peter, hold the thought right there. I have to get a break in here, but I want to. I'm glad we've explained how Lewis got to the jumping off point, because the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey once said, is what made Lewis Grizzard beloved and why we are still talking about him today. We are going to come back with Peter Stoddard and just an extraordinary topic, the book about Lewis Grizzard. One of the if Lewis Grizzard was alive today, he would be a zillionaire, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, we're back with Peter Stoddard, who has written about Lewis Grizzard. And Peter, there's so much to talk about here. I don't want to lose sight of time, but I do want to ask you, for those, you know, he obviously started writing about general interest. How would you describe his column to those who never read it?
Very rarely politically correct. he was edgy without ever being profane. He hung out his dirty laundry for the world to see, and I think that's what people related to, myself included. He was Southern through and through, pridefully Southern, patriotic. With regard to last hour's segment and equal pay for men and women, he said, I am all for paying women and men the same to do the same job. I just don't think women should drive.
I mean, I'm laughing because I remember him talking like that, and we're talking what 70s and 80s here, right?
Well, yeah, he left us. He left us 27 years ago, March 20th.
Right.
And so we're 1994 is when he left us, and you were talking about his earnings. This is not in the book because I learned it after the fact. But Jim Minter said, in his prime, which would have been probably 1992, Louis Grizzard was the highest earning journalist in the world. He sold out Las Vegas showroom, ballrooms, theaters, I should say, the Fox Theater, did a lot of stand-up, which was pretty much just telling stories from his columns. He wrote 25 books, 20 of which were New York Times bestsellers. But how Jim Minter knew this, I don't know, but he said he made more money than John Madden. And those of us that remember, in 1992, beloved John Madden, you couldn't really turn the channel on the TV without seeing John Madden. So Lewis was a big earner, not necessarily a responsible responsible with his money. He had some good business managers who tried to preserve his wealth, and it was sometimes a little frustrating because he was a very generous guy. He would take people who couldn't afford it to fundraising golf tournaments on the road, and he was just a big-hearted guy, loyal to his friends. There were some people in his life that weren't necessarily that loyal to him, and I resolved that if I reached anybody that had sour grapes or an axe to grind, I didn't want to hear their story. I did not interview any of his wives. They all lead private lives.
I interviewed maybe the last one once, Peter. So you may have chosen a good path.
Yeah, but I did find one good line.
Maybe not. By the way, I correct you. It may not have been the last one, so I got the numbers confused, just like Lewis did.
Yeah, I don't even mention the names. I know where most of them are, but one great line is he asked one of his wives, "Honey, what would you like for your birthday?" She said, "A divorce." He said, "Well, I really wasn't planning to spend that much."
I cannot tell you how many trips I used to take back in the day, Peter. I think they were cassettes. I don't remember. But he sold tapes of his Vegas shows, his shows in various places. And I mean, the only person I can think of that I would relate to is someone I'm also very fond of, but they're different, and that would be Jeff Foxworthy. They had a similar sound, but Jeff is far more politically correct than Lewis was.
They knew each other, and Jeff Foxworthy was, per his publicist, interested in speaking to me. I wanted to get my book published before the 25th anniversary of Lewis's death, and it's a big book. It's bigger than any of Lewis's, and I did not get to Jeff Foxworthy. I'm told Larry the Cable Guy knew Lewis,
right,
was an influence, but and Jerry Clower influenced Lewis. Lewis would be the first to say he borrowed a lot of jokes from his late heroic, tragic father. Borrowed a lot of jokes.
Now, Peter, which one was it? Was he in either England or Russia? I can't remember when he had to have heart surgery, and he told the surgeon, he said, I don't care what you do, just get me back to Athens in time for football season.
Yeah, well, there's a couple different versions of that.
Okay.
He was in Russia with his stepbrother, Ludlow Porch, a radio personality, whose real name was Bobby Hansen. And they were there. I think Ludlow was with his wife, but Lewis was without a companion in Russia. And Lewis got deathly sick. And his stepbrother just said, "Don't mess around with this. You get home." And he had to route back through London and was sweating profusely. And they wanted to hold him out put him in the hospital for a month of antibiotics. And Lewis said, "The hell you say, it's football season." He talked him into letting him come back to the U.S. I think Jim Minter picked him up at the airport, and he went to Emory Hospital, where they put him on a month of antibiotics. Randy Martin was the attending cardiologist for the last two operations, and he's a late chapter in my book. And he had neglected his wisdom teeth. His dentist said, you need to have these things pulled. And he thought, well, that might hurt. And it would have hurt. He ended up getting them pulled, and it was relatively painless by comparison to them carving his chest open. And when they got in there for surgery number three, half his chest, half his heart was gone almost. The infection had gone from his teeth to his heart.
Mm.
And he wrote about that unapologetically, just said, now pay attention to your teeth. I didn't do that. And after surgery number three, which it was a miracle he survived that, he knew within the year he was going to need surgery number four, and he knew that he was not likely to survive surgery number four. But he went, Randy Martin said he never complained about pain. I know he suffered excruciating pain. He was called the patient from hell, because he could be a little demanding, but he didn't complain, and he wrote about it with humor. And before his last surgery, when the operating cardiologists were talking to him and Randy Martin, they said, really, you've got less than a 10% chance of coming out of this operation alive and with your wits intact. Do you have any questions for us? And Lewis said, yes, doctors, when is the next bus to Albuquerque? And Randy Martin just busted up laughing, and the two surgeons, who had less of a sense of humor, probably wondered if Lewis thought he would get better cardiological care in New Mexico. But he could laugh at himself all the way to the end. Just remarkable.
The dog that did not hunt Lewis Grizzard's story, and we will talk again, because I have a couple of ideas in the back of my head that we will discuss. I can't thank you enough, Peter. You have brought the audience, and I know for me personally, a wonderful trip down memory lane. There has never been anyone like him since, I can assure you. There won't ever be either.
Well, and my hope and desire was that we can resurrect his legacy. I've found folks whose kids and grandkids have discovered his books and said, this guy is so funny, where can we find him? And some of his books are no longer in print. And we need to revive his legacy. And I'm glad to play a small part in doing that.
Well, Peter, come back soon. We will do that. And I can't thank you enough. It has been fantastic.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
You got it. Great to have Peter Stoddard on, taking us down, taking a lot of us who were alive in Lewis's time. And if you weren't, you missed something pretty spectacular. We will take a break. Pete Thamel, glad to be alive during his time as well. He'll join us in a half hour. And we've had a busy show with Coach Donnan and Jimbo Fisher. Many more as we continue.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here. Final 90 minutes of the program. Pete Thamel at the top of the next hour. And, of course, Jimbo Fisher was with us about 90 minutes ago. Hope you were able to hear him as well. Let's get back to the calls. And Carol is up next in Georgia. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you so much for having Peter Stoddard on and for your enthusiasm about Lewis Grizzard. I work with the Moreland Cultural Arts Alliance, and we operate the Lewis Grizzard Museum in his hometown. And I knew that you were a fan. We're building some new exhibits, and we have been planning to call and invite you to come on out and see us sometime.
I would absolutely love that, Carol. And I did not until today. I was unaware of this, and I feel negligent, but I will definitely get there. Cool. I cannot wait.
Well, please don't feel negligent. We have been busy expanding the really lovely museum that was started by his friends and his hometown after his passing. And we are located in a historic building. We have 8,000 square feet that we're developing. We're working on the lower floor first, which is devoted to his childhood and his youth. We do have a lot of personal items and memorabilia, his little baby mitts and booties, and his childhood catcher's glove, and lots of things that are being given to us by his family and friends. And we are also putting out some new media related to Lewis so that there are some fresh things on the market for people to enjoy to help support the museum. But we would love to.
Well, thank you. Carol, for those who are not geography literate in relation to Georgia, where exactly are you?
Moreland, Georgia is about 30 miles south of, as Lewis said, it's 30 miles and 100 years from Atlanta. And it's, yes, one of his
That's
favorite,
great.
My favorite. We are actually physically located 2.5 miles off of I-85, heading toward Warm Springs. And we're very conveniently located to the interstate. If you're headed out to Alabama or into Atlanta, we're a quick stop off the interstate. And you do have to pay a little bit of attention because Moreland is only a square mile wide and 400 people large. So, you know, don't miss us when you're passing.
Now, Carol, my travel the last 52 weeks has been limited, but that is about to end, and I am going to make a stop there. I will definitely call you beforehand because I want to make sure I see it all.
Well, we'll give you the royal tour, and we do make personal appointments beyond our open days. So thank you so much for talking about Lewis. We're working very hard to revitalize his memory because, what would he be saying with all the crazy things going on?
No, I was just communicating with a friend of mine, Carol, about Lewis in today's world. He would be in the news a lot.
Oh, he would. He was uncensored, heartfelt, from the heart, as we say. And the irony is that all of the people that he wrote about, we have some of his writings, in the museum, all the things he wrote about and the topics that he wrote about, we're still talking about political correctness in speech. We still talk about the same political figures that he talked about. It's ironic, it's almost a generation since he's been gone.
Well, I congratulations on the good work you and your colleagues do down there. And I look forward to seeing you very, very soon. Thank you so much, Carol.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Great to have you on. Yeah, wow. I didn't, the things you learn listening to the show, including myself. Tim is up next in Florida. Hey, Tim, thanks. Good afternoon. Tim, you there?
Yes.
Well,
sorry,
good.
You faded out there.
That's okay.
I have several instances where I ran into our friend Lewis. The first time was he was just a struggling writer in Atlanta, but he had been to a concert and his Porsche had been towed. And I was a claims adjuster, and I was at the police station getting a police report, and Lewis was there. And they were charging him for his police report, and he was raising hell with them. It was bad enough that he had to pay for his car being towed, and now he had to pay for a police report. That was my first run-in with him where I got a chance to speak to him. The one that I remember so vividly is in the old Gator Bowl days when Georgia and Florida would play in Jacksonville, and the Jacksonville Bulldog Club had a breakfast every morning before the game where we were drinking Bloody Marys at 6 o'clock. And of course, Lewis said he had been held down all the night before and people had poured Jack Daniels down his throat. And he was one of the keynote speakers for breakfast. And we would tailgate in the baseball park next to the Gator Bowl. And the weekend before this particular game, we had tied Vanderbilt in Nashville. I had stayed way too late in Vince Dooley's suite that night, and I guess he just wasn't as sharp the next day as he needed to be. And the only reason we tied that game was Vanderbilt missed a cheap little chip shot field goal there at the end, and so we ended up 10-10. So we're at the Gator Bowl, and of course nobody's expecting us to win. Florida was ranked number one for the first time in their history, and here we'd come off of a tie with Vanderbilt. And Lewis, in his own inimitable style, was drinking beer, and we were all headed to the restrooms there at the ballpark. And Lewis tripped over the pitcher's mound, and we all had to help him up and get him to the bathroom. But there was a couple there from Savannah, Georgia. He being a Bulldog and she being a Gator, they had made a bet the previous Saturday that the loser of the Gator of the Georgia-Florida game would have 5 minutes to draw a crowd, and that the loser would have to kiss the winner's rear end
right
on the pitcher's mound at the Gator Bowl. Well, that particular day, Georgia had two freshman running backs, Keaton and Tim Worley, and they ran all over the Florida defense with 60, 70-yard runs. And so sure enough, we all gathered around the pitcher's mound after game, and of course Lewis was there, and the gentleman came up and he had this nice big fluffy pillow, you know, with lace all over it, and his wife got down on her knees and he dropped trowel and she planted one on his rear end, and Lewis was standing there in his own style. He said, "Well, this is the first time I saw an ass whipping and an ass kissing on the same day."
Wow, what a great story, Tim.
On a more personal note, my dad was having bypass surgery by the same physician that did Lewis's surgery about a year before, and he had written a book, if you remember, called "They Tore Out My Heart and Stomped That Sucker Flat."
Right.
And so I'm in the waiting room, and there were seven heart surgeries that day, and I'm reading that book. And my mother and my aunt and my grandmother are there, and they're all solemn, and everybody in there is solemn. And I'm sitting over there reading this book, and I'm breaking up, cracking up, laughing out loud. And everybody's looking at me like, what are you doing in here? You belong someplace else. But if you read that book, or if you ever heard him talk about his heart surgery, you know how funny he was about that. So, later on, he came down to Tampa, did one of his concerts. I just happened to be the Bulldog Club president that year, and we had a contingency that went up afterwards and asked him if there was anything we could do for him. By that time, he had already had several adult beverages, and he was already smoking a cigarette. I said to myself right then, I said, obviously the heart surgery didn't keep him from smoking, so he lived a very full life for 47 years. And the reason why the Mr. Stoddard couldn't remember the wives was Lewis called them all plaintiff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I remember that one pretty well. No, hey, Tim, I can't thank you enough for sharing the stories. You've made my day and hopefully many others.
Thank you.
Great to have you on. No, it's I'm glad we were able to spend some time doing justice. I've wanted to do this for a very long time, and we will take a break. We still have about an hour and change to go here on a Thursday afternoon. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Welcome back here on a Thursday afternoon. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we will talk to Pete Thamel at the top of the next hour. Let's check in with Carl, who is up next. Hey, Carl, go right ahead. Carl, you there?
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey, good afternoon to you.
I was a friend of both Lewis's and Ludlow Port.
Oh, really?
And had a cabin right across the street from Ludlow. And Lewis had a little cabin just across the mountain. And Peter's book was actually published before I got to know him, but I got a whole chapter because The Louis Grizzard stories are just wonderful.
They are.
And but it's very, very difficult to tell a Louis Grizzard story in mixed company, because it all has to do with women, smoking, and alcohol. And when we asked Louis what he wanted to play at his funeral, do you know what he said?
No.
Volleyball.
That is funny.
And so the stories go on and on. And I remember the day on a Sunday when Luddy came across the gravel road from his cabin to mine, and he had his head bowed, and he said, "Hey, Doc, Louis is dead." Ooh. And at any rate, we had great times with them, and look forward to sharing more of those stories with you all, as well as with Peter. And thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Doc, thank you. You be well, and thanks for sharing. I really do appreciate it. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Tom is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Mr. Bonbon. Paul, listen, I started watching your show probably around the outbreak of COVID in the U.S. and all that kind of stuff. And I really like it because I'm a fan of football in particular, but my two favorite teams are in the Sun Belt, the Raging Cajuns, which that's my alma mater, and the LSU Tigers. But your show transcends sports. With your Louis Grizzard piece a minute ago, and so many other, I could cite so many other episodes over the last year that I've been watching. It just, your show and your staff put together great guests. It's entertaining. It's mostly about sports, of course, but it's more than that. It's so entertaining, and I don't want to talk anymore because I want to hear what other people have to say. That's what I love about your show and what you have to say. But thank you, Paul. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You have a great show. Don't change the thing. God bless you.
Tom, thank you so much, and same to you. And I, on behalf of everyone who works here, we all thank you for sharing those thoughts. Let's continue. Jimmy is up next in South Alabama. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Paul. You're having a great day, I can see.
Thank you.
And I am a big fan of Louis Grizzard. I have probably all the books that he's ever written. And I feel like I haven't understood anything since 1963, as he would like to quote. But he's very entertaining, and it's good that you had all of this on today.
Thank you.
And I just hope and pray you and your family are well. And I forgot what I wanted to call you about now. I've been on hold for so long, but I'll figure it out and try it again.
Well, Jimmy, thank you for saying that. And, again, sometimes these shows start with a purpose, and we obviously had one tonight, and then it just disappears, but that's okay.
I enjoy listening to all of the Louis R. stuff. Anything Louis is good. So you did a good job, and I'll just hang up and let others do. I'm not important enough that I ever met him. So just keep going, Paul, like you are. And,
thank you, Jimmy.
And I hope you and your family do well.
We are, and same to you. And we're going to move on and talk to Pete in a minute. But I'm glad we were able to talk about Louis. And you know, I think what he represents is he represented a point of view that a lot of people subscribe to. And I know today things are a little bit different, but he was able to laugh at everything, even his own life, which, should have never ended at 47. Some of it was self-inflicted, but I'm glad we were able to spend some time remembering an absolute legend. So we will take a break. We still have an hour to go.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.